feed into BC. 5 of those land stations experienced an increase in murder cases. This is year on year over the same period. In terms of attempted murder, 6 of the 9 stations experienced a decrease in terms of attempted murder. 3 of the 9 stations experienced an increase in terms of attempted murder. I think it's important to note, 4 of the stations, Manenberg, Ravensbury, Teamburg, and Worcester, experienced decreases in both murder as well as attempted murder over the same corresponding period. When it's just some of the highest violence that have been arrested, I think what is important to know, it's not an exhaustive list, but it gives an indication as to some of the successes that have been achieved. I'll try and go through them as quickly as possible. Absalom, aka Ura, the member of the JFK in Timber, was charged for a murder that was, if you remember, it was a 1-year-old child that was killed, Tasman now. As well as three attempted murders in captured people. He was arrested, charged, and in custody, awaiting a formal bail application on the 6th of September 2018. Then there's the Yinal, the Yigman of the American. He's the uncle of the 1-year-old that was killed. He was arrested for the possession of an illegal firearm in the same street, same house, in Kamrozi chapter. He's out on bail. He'll be appearing in court on the 24th of October. Then Hendrik, aka Pete, another victim of the JFK in Timber. We charged him for murder, as well as possession of an unlicensed firearm. He shot a male on the corner of Lynch and Peter Charles for St. Patrick. He's been opposed to jail successfully. He's remanded into custody. He will appear on the 17th of October 2018. Then we've got Peter, aka Faith, the equal of the American. We shot him for murder. We shot a JFK member in Captain Rock. He's opposed bail. He's remanded to Baltimore. So he's awaiting a formal bail application. We have here the 30th of October. Then in the next case, we had two suspects, Edward and Mario, aka Bucky. They're both equal of the JFK. We charged them for carjacking in 3rd Avenue City. They've been demanded in custody. That was opposed. They appeared to be in 3rd Avenue. Solomon, aka April, is in front of the contract. We charged him for murder. He stabbed a member of the Mongols in the Avenue. We opposed that successfully. He's demanded in custody. He'll appear the 7th of September. Nadir Rim, aka Crazy. We charged him for murder of the community gang member in Eastridge. He was remanded into custody at Baltimore. He appeared at the 2nd of October as well. Then there were three suspects. Thomas, he's the interim leader of the Joseph in Elfie. Johannes and Michael, they were charged for double murder at the Tarab. We charged for double murder at the Dugout of the bad boys in Yonder. We opposed them successfully. They were three suspects appeared the 3rd of September. Then another two suspects, Frankie and Austin Station, the Yukon shooters of the Yama. We charged for double murder and attempted murder, the shocking justice in Clarkestead. We opposed them successfully. They appeared in the 23rd of August. Prince and Isawa, aka Kuram, the Yukon shooters of the Asia in Manhattan. We charged them for murder and three attempted murders of relatives of the Americans, including two school children in Matilda Court. The person killed was an 8-year-old, the two school going children in the uniform were injured, although mine was less serious than this. They remanded into custody, pending a formal bail hearing application, 30th of August that year. Then, 7 suspects, including Conrad Florentina and 6 others. He's the suspected, one of the suspected leaders of then another two subjects, Remedy, aka people, he's a prominent member of HR, and Jake, the shooter of HR. They charged for 3 murders and 2 attempted murders of a 17 member. We opposed those successfully, they custody, they killed 24 September. Then we've got Christopher Van Dyke, the leadman of the Dane Boys. In Chicago, not necessarily a prominent leader, but he was charged with the murder of the leader of the Dane Boys, a Daryl Peterson, aka Dana, in Marlton Street, Ontario. He's been remanded into custody, pending a formal jail application. He appeared the 4th of September. Then we've got Rico Hespa, the suspected leader of the JTY in Houston. He charged him for assault by the bank. Bail was opposed successfully, he's in custody. He appeared the 11th of September. Then Jaheim Mathia, suspected leader of the Eastern Boys in Houston. He's charged with possession of stolen property. He was found with a stolen engine in his possession. He's remanded into custody, pending formal bail application. He appeared the 23rd of August. Then Kalambi, suspected leader of JTY, and Kuoka, who's in his class, charged for murder. Bail was opposed successfully. He's in custody as well. He appeared the 13th of September. Then Becker, the leader of the Larkin Boys in the Lower Park, charged with possession of drugs in the Apple Court in the Lower Park. Bail was opposed successfully. He's also in custody. He appeared the 3rd of October. Then Brown, aka Tony, he's been a shooter of the Leviton. He tried to convert a case of murder. He shot a 28 member in Cliff's Springer Creek, Italy. He's also in custody, he appeared before. Johnson, a Eagle of the shooter, the Eagle shooter of the Leviton, charged him for murder as well as case of murder. He shot 28 gang members in Sentinel Creek. He opposed bail successfully, and he appeared the 22nd today. Sigler is a shooter of the 3-8, also charged with murder and shot an opposing 3-8 movie member in Market Street, Chicago. He appeared yesterday in Georgia. Then a further two suspects, Dan Bailey and Martin, they're both shooters of fancy books. They were charged for attempted murder, also shot an American gang member in Upside, Ontario. They appear yesterday as well. Skipper, a hitman, a shooter of the Park Gun, who charged him for possession of an unlicensed firearm and attempted murder. He shot a 26 gang member in Largo. He did. He is in custody. He appears in court today. Landros, a hitman, a shooter of the Badger, who charged him for murder. Chuck and Nathan in the late last week, they appeared in court tomorrow. Tata, a human shooter of the day, who charged with possession of an unlicensed firearm and attempted to use murder, shot at Nathan in the Batacudas in the day. He appeared on Friday, that is. Then, September, aka Little, the Eastman of the Park Gun, he was charged for 1 murder. He's remanded in custody. He appeared the 24th of August. Thomas, the Eastman of the Park Gun, he was charged for possession of an unlicensed firearm shooting targeted at himself in Labrador. He appeared the 27th of August. Then we've got Gareth Goliath, aka Lilla. He's the Eastman of the Park Gun, charging for possession of an unlicensed firearm. Also, he loaded Van Dale. He opposed bail successfully. He's in custody. He appears the 23rd of August. Apollos, the equal of the Mongols, he charged him for attempted murder and possession of an unlicensed firearm. He caught him in closed seat as well. He's demanded into custody. He appears at the 10th of October. Peterson, a hitman of the Mongols, charged him for unlicensed firearm after he was caught by a PRC member. with a shotgun as well. He's in custody as well. He appears the 27th of August. Nadir, he put up a mafia case, charged with murder and attempted murder in Hollow Street Eastridge. This is the conflict that's driven between the mafia, Kenya mafia, and the bank force. He's in custody. He appears the 23rd of August. I think that is just a snapshot of some of the things that we made in terms of the aid around Operation Cyclone. If we go over, Minister, to the investigative impact, I think that the primary legislation about disposal to complete the scanning of the appropriate legislation, which in essence, and this is just a summary, a part, which speaks to the increasing measures to combat organized crime, money laundering and criminal gang activity. It prohibits certain activities relating to racketeering activities. Provides for the prohibition of money laundering and for an obligation to report on certain information. And importantly, it criminalizes certain activities associated with gangs. And then allows for the proceeds for the recovery of those who unlawful activities. The primary legislation about it. So I think Minister, just to note that where people have not been charged or arrested, we've omitted certain information, just giving a very general overview. And then where it is a cases that are currently in our courts, we've been given a little bit more detail. So in some of our classes in Blue Down, as an example, these are not all our local investigations or inquiries, it's just an indication of some of those that are running in those specific cases. We've got two big investigations and inquiries running. In the first one, we've got a total of 240 cases where we've identified and linked those cases where the NPA is currently formulating charges against gangs. In the second case, from the investigation inquiry, we've got a total of 256 cases identified and linked, as well as overseeing the formulating and finalizing the charges by the NPA. In the booster cluster, there are six cases that have been identified, and we are waiting the feedback from the NPA as to the charges to be formulated. In the second case in Houston, it's a possible act of forfeiture, it's in the chapter 6, and we are working the NPA to finalize that. In the younger cluster, there are quite a few that we want to highlight. In the third one, the chapter 6, involved a gang grouping. It's referred to possible act of forfeiture. In the second one, the NPA is currently formulating charges. There's a pre-trial date already of the 24th of August 2018. In investigation 3, the NPA is currently formulating charges. There's a pre-trial date set for the 3rd of September. In the fourth one, you'll see the NPA is currently formulating charges. Set down to the 21st of September 2018. And investigation 5, they are currently formulating charges and the 3th of September 2018. As you can see from those, there's quite a bit of progress that's been made in that regard. Furthermore, in the younger cluster, this one we can use a little bit more detail, provided around that, investigation 6. It's the Stanfield and 22 others that have been charged on 109 counts, including racketeering and gang membership, which is chapter 4. It was set down to the 22nd of October 2018. Investigation 7, you'll see the indicated here for more definitive in terms of the gang affiliation of the gang membership, the outer gang. They were charged 5 counts of murder as well as gang membership in terms of chapter 4. We are waiting judgment. Investigation 8, the 6 counts of murder, 2 attempted murder, as well as gang membership, charged on chapter 4, but that's still under investigation, so we've omitted it. And then, furthermore, in the mutual claim cluster, 3 major stations, 3 major too far away for it. I think there's a motion from our management that the hospital should be in the challenges with regard to certain hotspots, specifically related to gang conflict and gang violence. Our approach going forward is one. We are going to strengthen the operational function of the gang. So we've deployed it as I indicated earlier at the center of tactical conversion. So more of our operational units are being deployed and managed from the environment. Two, we're strengthening our focus on identified high-crime volume and incident hotspots. We have now started to mention both the conducting and the analysis around specific changes to determine exactly where those offenses are occurring. We've adopted an approach to reorientation where we are trying to strengthen our crime prevention capability. And then we are deploying more operationally ready personnel, those with specialized skills. So the age around is not necessarily more is not necessarily it's around having the right organization. So we are thinking to get more of our most specialized skills, those that are more operationally ready in the true sense of the word, to deal with the more priority of them. And then there's an acknowledgement that we need to step up our intelligence system operation. Our deployments, we are monitoring and maximizing based on our traffic and our pay. We are striving to improve and strengthen our informal network. And then there's an acknowledgement that we need to strengthen our digital capability around gas. In short, Minister, that concludes our presentation.
Thank you, Brigadier, for that comprehensive report. And I'm just really delighted to congratulate the PC and his staff on the very well in place of this part of the years, some outstanding results. Brigadier, just for the sake of good administration, I'm no longer a minister. Check the chair. Okay. Can I just ask one question from my side from the outset, please? Because it wasn't made clear. Who is the operations commander and who is the operations
that you're going to capacitate your communication. But
2016. But those you're not sure with those who are prosecuting the authority. Many of those guys come out. I know there was in the whole part all the shootings and all those arrests. But a lot of those guys, you know, they have the means to fight. And so if you just tell us, you know, of these arrests, are you following up? And are they, you know, convicted at the end of the day? Because that is the big thing. We, you don't want them back on the streets. And can you just give us some background? Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, that was a bit long, colleague. I just wanted to alert members to the fact that we have got a debate, and some of the things I was speaking with you about. But we have got a debate tomorrow on finding the Public Service Commissioner's report, which was talked to by the Public Service Commissioner on the last week. We have got a debate in the House tomorrow, and we will move to that. The National Guard of Policing numbers in the province. That's it.
Thank you, Brigadier Foster, for this exhaustive and very insightful presentation. Very highly appreciated. In terms of hospitals, now Delft, say for instance Delft is not is being regarded as a hotspot. But it could be broken down in smaller sections, say whoever is not a hotspot, but Leiden is a hotspot. So, but now I'm more concerned about the shifting of hotspots. When a base camp is being established, people are becoming visible, there's visibility, there's movement, and now they are shifting their activities, their criminal activity. That's the one point. How do you deal with it and do you encounter it? Secondly, I have to congratulate you. This is major in terms of the arrest of high flyers. And I know some of these guys. My point is, if you have 80 high flyers being caught, they should start singing Latin marriage and being interrogated. Because they know who the others are also. And I think that's a very important point. Let them talk. But what Aaron is also as we call it, pimp on the others, so that they can also be arrested. My final question, in terms of the integration of operational strategies with the law enforcement traffic, etc., etc., do you look at specific skill set, specialized functions, and in terms of your structure, that these functions are being allocated to specials, or are you working in tandem of everybody together and not actually looking at specialized functions? And finally, do you encounter that people are more willing to come forward, even if they are more exposed? You see, they go to the police station, they are in a sort of comfort zone, but in a base camp, to disseminate information and to report, you see, it's a different ballgame. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Operationally, you're
of the integrated operations and ensuring specialized
play off with the Dr. Planet in working personnel with higher level of skills. And this is what he's referring to. So upskilling the members. So you can sometimes do less if they function at a higher level, if they have more skill, more capacity, more competency. And that's in any environment. And that's what we attempted to do. So we have initiated the process where we are going to strengthen our tactical response team. Those are the teams that are there to deal with medium risk intervention and major things in terms of reaction. So we are strengthening those. We are establishing another 4 or 5 weeks in the Western Cape. We're sending the first group of people to be trained in September. And we are going to put these at trust level, and they will begin far more proactively and aggressively with those.
So can I ask that we restrict ourselves to operation plan? The goal of the bank is regarding to DC population ratio is going to be the bank that the committee will agree to invite both the provincial and the national commissioner to respond to the public service commissioner's report. So we're a much larger debate on that, or discussion on that at a later stage. But we could plan to do that.
Thank you. The next question will be responded to by Gina Aguirre. The question was, what would that come from? And if we lost the fight against the gangs, and it should be followed up by a question of arrest and conviction. Gina Aguirre.
Okay, question. I think let's just start with where the gangs come from. We have since skinned before. And the single largest and consistent pipeline of firearms that we detected over the past 5 years have come from personal experience in the current industrial environment. No single source has provided 2,000 pounds for us to get in that kind of environment. So that's the first thing. In terms of that, we are picking up in the beginning of January to date that the remaining balance of guns, there was about 800 stored after the 1,000 pounds that we managed to get back over the years, that they are continuing to kill people at an alarming rate. So in the gang areas where they were active before, which is also specific. So there's a concerted effort between ourselves and the force to get to those firearms one and centralize all the cases that we're picking up now around those firearms and building poker cases around that. The stations are actively involved through if there are incidents in a particular area linking one gun, let's say Crunchbow gun, to five murders or something, they centralize it immediately, they dedicate the finalization of an immediate objective, this operation to retrieve that gun. So we have been having slow retrieval processes in that. But I think what must be borne in mind here, a Indy gun Principal gun is fully recognized as that after it has undergone ballistic analysis. So our emphasis is on getting the large firearms so that we can turn this through analysis that way. So yes, the gun in circulation, a single source, has been that environment and we're still working towards working on the balance in terms of that.
It's critically important for the public confidence that statistic comes out as quickly as possible. Because the Prince case has so undermined the public confidence in surrendering arms to police for safe custody that the sooner you can get that statistic out to the public, the better it will be. Because, as you know, there's 250,000 firearms at the moment that are liable actually for surrender on the basis of the unlicensed map. So that is what you may that piece of information to come out as soon as possible.
Okay, Chairperson, in terms of the plea bargaining, the plea statement as part of the public record of Dell or Pencil, he has indicated how many firearms and which firearms he has provided to gangs in the Western Gates for the public record. In terms of the La Hare, the spin-off, Nightfall trial of La Hare, and race issue, there are also other statistics to record related to incidents. You will recall that in the 3 prior years of the La Hare rape case, that they demanded all the murders and attempted the murders linked to that particular case. We've handed over well over 3,500 records to them, and that on the record, but I think what is happening, maybe the media is not always present at all of these things that are not pre-planned process in the particular, I mean, those kind of things, so they're not consistent, but certainly the information is there. I think if the request for commercial conditions consideration, I think it is an important element. But this is part of the discussion. Yes. Let's first deal with the arrest of conditions in terms of PUCA. Okay. In terms of prior to the, just to show in this case how it operates, prior to the to this period of time, from the period of 2017, there's been certain PUCA conditions. Okay, it is at High Court, Regional Court of Universal Courts. There's been 17 drug dealers convicted, also for dealing in drugs, also by containing violence, separate from the broken process. Now, these numbers, as well as compared with the numbers of trials currently on trial, I'll just speak to that, illustrate that the pace of delivery of audience poker is determined by the process that is followed. Firstly, we only hear these cases in the Kayelisha priority court and some of the cases in the High Court. In other words, those two courts also provide the bulk of these cases because they require specialized prosecutorial attention, of which they have dedicated prosecutors. And advocates who are not available for scale of admission. For example, 236 cases in the Blue Downs cluster should suddenly go to court tomorrow. They will not be capacity to handle this and Chaparaki case. Even the case is currently on court. So that's the first thing we need to understand. But the pace of delivery and the pace, for example, of 2017 that resulted in only 13 or 12 new cases has to do with the process. The second point is there is a basket of cases that goes into a poker case. And that series might be a murder year, a robbery case, a house breaking, and that what cases get selected is determined by the grouping game group that we target. So we basically have a four cases final basket that we bring over the minimum of practice. So that also involves a certain process. And when you look at our presentation and we talk about pre-trial, that is where we get challenged about the cases that we bring and it takes a long time. Get challenged about the cases we bring because now we are recruiting people to write the hearing and that we will bring people to Section 9 around getting this. So that is the point at which we have long delays. Where the defense continuously of the suspect challenges with what they think is a presumption that informs Section 9 or racketeering in terms of check. So those are the phases that are natural to a poker trial, which is we do not face in the law, or which delay the process inadvertently in this particular matter in that case. So I want to mention a particular case to illustrate this and on the pace of conditioning. The Ralph Sampson matter that we referred to in 22 hours, that case was finalized 2 years ago and they were arrested, charged 2 years ago. Some of the cases involved, and this is the other thing, they crossed through the two jurisdictions. Therefore, some of the cases were committed in the some of them were committed. What they require from the NPA, over and above the normal process, is a centralization certificate that decides where the case will be done. And that is usually a long process that adds an extra time delay to the normal process, which in this case was, in fact, apart from the pre-trial challenges that we said. So those are some of the matters that I want to say. Nonetheless, we are ready now for trial.
Totally different circumstances than on scene statements. So
so that needs to be understood. It's a different process. But looking at our prison population and the conditions that we have, these cases were built with prison systems themselves. And the Atlantis called a cloud, for example, we had witnesses from Guatemala area. So despite the assumption that Socrates made that these things store cases, there's a different process that brings together what we support. In some cases, in communities where community structures are strong, people are encouraged, you know, to fulfill their civic duty and come forward, and that becomes the extra support in the identification of witnesses. Our challenge there remains in the Western Cape is that from my assessment of witnesses availability to go into the program, that remains a major challenge that needs to be addressed by a broader environment in the community and at the political level than just us, because people just so certainly do not want to have a relocate for a time period that is trying to support. Just take, for example, if there was a civilian witness in the reactor, that person would have been in witness protection probably for the past 2-3 years while we're waiting, and now we'll continue for the next 2 years while we're trying. So it's a considerable issue that needs to be managed, which is a bit beyond our direct things. We can give assurances, but so it is not an insurmountable challenge. The fact that we have conditions, the fact that we have people that come to court despite not wanting to go into a witness protection group, bears testimony to the fact that the challenge is not insurmountable. It would be an advantage if they could all be accommodated, but that those are other issues that we must address at a particular level. I think that is my part. Jefferson, go ahead.
Thank you. The next question was related to this case of crime where death was cited as an example. But a similar question was also raised by the Honorable Lecker regarding this case of crime from people related to the state. This one too is with us. She is a specialist in terms of crime analysis and giving projections and indications in terms of crime displacements. So towards the end, she's going to respond. She is also a role student in the woman's mind. While she is recollecting herself, a gentleman man is going to respond on the question regarding the integrated operation and the specialized functions that we have within our teams.
Can I just ask
for
a
question,
please,
about
this
they are also having plans, hardship, key actions they must do.
targeting the cane beans, targeting the rabana, identify the positive plan, and making arrest that the good area in the presentation. But they said as well, the so-called Operation Sun agenda cannot be successful alone. Then we have brought in the integration with the CPU of the station, and also the integration with the TRT teams that are in any case deployed in the prisons. And then also integration with provincial intervention teams and cluster teams. Now they are saying for us to be successful, all the teams should know each other and should work with each other and should complement and supplement each other. Now to that end also we have one now what we call the activation team. So that and one of the lines of defense. So that if there's a drive-by shooting, we need these forces that are there in the terrain, need to be able, therefore, to activate themselves through the base camp and be able to close in those people that committed that drive-by shooting. So now that begins to talk to the integration of the forces, And then over and above that, we are integrated with our law enforcement, there's visit planning, we do evaluation. And then there's also in terms of the displacement, because the impact that is happening is also resulting and truly spoken in the displacement. We have done a radius analysis. And we have seen that because of the forces reporting all of them at the base camp, there is a market displacement. But then again, it is not the visibility alone that we are applying. We are also applying target breeding geographically to say this people can eat the also on their own. But we can't put a step in all of them. But through the integration of the operational command, as I say, the station commander has a responsibility. As a client, the station commander as a client in that sense, you should come to the base camp and say, what do I have here today? Do I have the service that promised to include the plan of the team? Then you can begin to check and do whatever monitoring you must do. Then the people head of the station as well as what responsibilities in terms of the plan. And then also the cluster people command has got a responsibility in terms of the plan. That is what we call the integration of command. The DCC and the cluster commander, they've got responsibility. And ultimately myself as an overall commander for that. We have also now upgraded the comfort for the members of our station there. In terms of saying we need to have floors here. We have begun to do that. And to wrap it up in terms of the language that we are using, to say that operational center of the center of operational excellence and technical development. So we are also working on the mindset of the member. So that ultimately through proper understanding of what we are doing and the activities we are doing, we can get optimal benefits from all the resources that we have there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Let me respond to the following questions. The impact that could have been brought about by the removal of members from the stations where they are normally operating from as a result of the establishment of the base camps has not happened. All that the base camps have served to do is to be a point of convergence away from the stations, bringing in the 259 members of last year, which was 269, who are bringing these members together. And these members that we are bringing in, that have been brought into the base camps, are multidisciplinary forces. And we are linking them with specific or certain members from the station so that we operate a bit away from a station atmosphere and climate, so that we also allow some form of confidentiality and a surprise element in terms of how we are executing our operations. But can be no station that is going to find itself worse off as a result of the establishment of the base camps. And those base camps will be operating from those specific localities and enhancing policing in the same policing precincts where they have actually been established. And then the other question was in terms of the impact that could have been made in the base camps or in the vicinity of the base camps like the East base camp, the results that we have achieved in that particular locality are too strict to be used. That's all that I need to say for now. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to give operational statistics, but today is the 22nd of August. So if I'm asking for what I was talking about, I will refer to Honorable Necker to what the statistics were at this particular point in time in the Philippines area in terms of the murders and the attempted murders, knowing where we are coming from in terms of the damage that the Maidana area has brought about in the province last year. But the results are really astounding. Then the other question, which is related to the displacements in the Richards Plain precinct in particular, and the other displacements elsewhere, how do we monitor and ensure that these things do not happen? I'm leaving that for last to give us an indication of the processes that we follow to ensure that those displacements are not an impact on the operations that we are executing on the ground.
Thank you for your question. The analysts will compile precise the normal statistics, also look at all the contributing factors. So the process is a time pattern analysis. They see various time frames utilized in order to monitor the time and see what changes appear. The time pattern analysis will include those specific hotspots, specific days and times in which times occur, and then also identifying the particular time categories that are involved in those specific areas. With the time pattern analysis, time set analysis also compiled by the members and also to guide the operational deployment. The time analysis also compiled environmental assessments with actually the field visits in the area to identify specific units of opportunity for criminal activity and also inform the operational deployment in that regard as well. They identify specific contributing factors and then also environmental changes in those areas to guide operational deployment. The mention has been made regarding the radius analysis that we conducted. We've done that specifically on the base camp and in particular hotspot areas in those identified station precincts. And yes, we have identified the welcome movement within station precincts and even across station precincts. But information is provided to the operational personnel where they will compile overflow strategies in order to curb those crimes that is on the move to other specific areas as well. I also need to indicate that this effort indicated this specific meeting was conducted to monitor these crimes occurrence, and then obviously the deployment or the grids of people working with it made with that crime to ensure that the people are working in the right place at the right time and in order to address the specific crime categories. Also identified specific activities that are done by the operational personnel to address the great crime category as well. I also need to mention that we are continuously also training our analysts in improving the capability at the station level and providing more non-stop to the operations personnel. Thank you.
The last response, the question as to how what criteria was followed in identifying the next stations where we established the base camps.
there's a total of 34 Kandy hosted stations in this province. And of that 34, we are focusing mainly on the 25 Kandy hosted stations. However, in terms of identifying the 9 stations and the establishment of base camps, we were informed by the question, the criteria of those stations being in the hotspot areas. Secondly, also the other criteria were the high volumes of the gang-related incidents that were reported in those 9 stations. So that is the criteria that we followed, because we also needed to ensure that we would resource our operation when we were executing it. And we also needed to consider that initially it was 269 members, and there's so much that you can do with 269 members. So that's the principle that we followed in establishing those base camps in the 9 priority stations. And the observation that could be made from certain quarters that we are failing to fight the gangs, just give us a chance. We don't want to blame things on historical issues and historical backgrounds. However, it is an operation that started from the 11th of May, and we need some time to see what comes out of it. Thank you.
Thank you,
Jill.
Are there any other questions? Can I just touch on one or two things about my piece? I'm going to general deal with your permission. As you probably know, I've visited a couple of your places. I should know, but I'll find out anyway. Our personal observations I'd like to put in writing to you, just relating to what I feel might assist you in some capacity there. Because essentially these emergency terms are called forward operating bases. In other words, they're establishing the dominant terrain in any territory. Obviously, we're not in an emerging environment, but that's essentially what it is, in creating it. And obviously, you've got to make yourself top, right, on being there, and therefore, the personal security of those bases has got to be an increasing importance. So, I think simply, the dedicated task is simply to observe. I just wanted to ask one other issue, because you have just now touched on sustainability, because sustainability is something that has happened to we looked at, all the people, I'm sure members know, all the people that are part of the police are coming from other provinces, and it's nice to meet so many of them from other provinces. But the sustainability and the continuation, the legacy of this project going into the stations, and the local, the permanent local units are going to be pretty important. So at some stage there, the transition is going to have to take place to ensure that they don't just create a vacuum. I didn't see in your supply units that there's any dedicated air support. Is respond to Lucy? Sorry, we're not asking. Can I just ask that you keep it as short as possible because we now are in injury time, we still have two presentations to go.
Thank you, Chair. My question, Chair, is in relation to the current situation in the area of Malagana. Now that you mentioned that the people of America can change the place, however, I may not be able to get the actual resources from this program itself. I want to understand, Chairperson, to what extent has your presence in the area of Montana impacted on the environmental issues? If you're looking at Montana, there are not service towers in Montana. And I want to understand, do you have the necessary tools to operate in Montana at night? Key to that question would be vis-a-vis the environment in Phoenix, where the Acropas would like to see them, and in Bishop Bay itself, the Acropas would like. After all, in Bishop Bay, if you drive around Bishop Bay, there's a heavy presence of Tarantinas, where there's a clear identifiable sign where you find taxis or shoes hanging from a electric cable. And that's an indication that after you have the shop day, they will tell you where to find the shoes hanging from the electric cable. It says
this year, we do not get such cases. In terms of the program being, I think when we talk about the investigative feedback during the time of thunder, okay, there is only an excess forfeiture investigation, but not necessarily a chapter, a section 9, chapter 4. So there's a case involving excess forfeiture in particular, that's chapter 6, that is currently in the book. But in terms of the other basket of successes that we spoke about, section 9, gang-related cases, racketeering, there is not necessarily that success. It is a challenge we're looking at in terms of, as we said, we need to strengthen our gang capacity provincially and as stations. That those challenges will be addressed. But if you're talking about areas that have steamed up, there has been much more higher rate of success in terms of corporate cases that we're willing to try. And in terms of winning cases last year, yes, we have a significant drop in that was based up in the areas in terms of
slides, and it's quite packed in, really.
Yeah. Okay.
if you want to, the quickest way to resolve this matter is if we continue with the value suspension inquiry, if we extend our committee time until, say, 11 o'clock or half past 11. What's your opinion, Chris?
Me personally, I don't have an issue with any of the judge. I think we need to do justice to it.
Can we extend the committee time? The Christian, the Hindu, and the
Authority, and she's also a member of the priority committee. We
we of course give feedback monthly to Prof Joins, which is co-chaired between the PC and Colonel Aaron from the South African National Defence Force. Chairperson, just in terms of explaining the upstream prosecution, it may be a bit misguiding, and that's why we felt this try and simplify. When you look at the value map of alcohol distribution, you'll see that you've got your manufacturer, you've got your legal distribution, then you have your legal outlets, and then you have what we find in the game changer, a system of sub-distribution. We use the example there of wheelbarrows, but we know it's often done in wheelie bins and so, and that is where the legal outlets knowingly and purposely sell to the illegal outlets. So the upstream prosecution for that matter, Chair, when you look at that picture, the broken line, the dash is then where we used to focus, and that's only with the police raiding the illegal shebeens. And what we've now done is we've moved that prosecution to also then include the legal outlets. Now, when you look at the Western Cape Liquor Act, Section 76.3 states that any person who sells liquor to a person knowing or having reasonable grounds to suspect that such a person will resell the liquor otherwise than is permitted in terms of this act, then commits an offence. The fines that is mentioned there, that is then if it's given or allocated through a court of law, but there is also a process, Chairperson, where the Liquor License Tribunal, those are then slides 4 and 5, you'll find the detailed mandate of the Liquor License Tribunal. And I just want to draw your attention to section 23, 4 of 5, order the licensee to pay such fines as it may deem appropriate subject to the prescribed limit. So when we speak about the upstream prosecution in our environment, Chair, those are not matters that go to a court of law. Those are matters that are then administered through the Liquor License Tribunal, which is then under the auspice of the Liquor Authority. Now, when you look at the next slide, Chairperson, let me just see there, I'm going to, and that is now, in terms of the fines, we increased the fines in 2017 from 20,000 rand to 100,000 rand per incident, and it's in the process now of being increased to 110,000 rand. We've established the provincial joints, as I've mentioned before, and with the initiative of the Western Cape Liquor Authority and Advocate Van Lille, he can speak a bit more if it's required. He also introduced what is called the shortened procedure, which is basically a similar process to plea bargaining in terms of Section 105A of the Criminal Procedure Act. And the results, you can see the Chairperson, 2015-16, the income was 27 million. 2016-17, there's a 36 million, it's a 31% increase. But in the fines of 2015-16, before the Liquor Authority came to community safety, they had a total of 11 fines for the year. Last year it was 112, if my figures are correct, and it increased by 1.78 million in terms of collected fines. Chair, so that is the upstream prosecution, and we believe that we have a successful recipe here in terms of preventing the deliberate distribution by legal outlets to illegal outlets. It's also interesting to know, Chair, that when you go to an area where the game changer focus, Kailisha, the young and so on, you'll always find that you have a ratio of about 1 to 30. For every one legal outlet, there's 30 illegal outlets, and the industry can only deliver to legal outlets, and they then leave it to the legal outlets to self-distribute. It is also why we are looking at the introduction of the sliding scale, Chair, because we know that the industry is rewarding volumes. We want to then link the fees to that. Chairperson, the second one that you asked us to brief you on was then the payment of admission of deals. So we had a workshop on the 22nd of September 2017 that was with them to understand what are their frustrations and what are the barriers that they find. And they spoke about the fact that many of the cases are not being prosecuted. We then had Africa Kobe, she did an audit of the cases with the systems of Colonel Tate, of the younger cluster, and what we actually found is that most of the cases is not a question of not being prosecuted. What people do is they pay admission of guilt. And that admission of guilt is anything between 500 and 2,500 criminal cases. And then what happens is because of a legal opinion that the police had and they currently work on, they then return that ticket to the person that paid that admission of guilt. So what you have now, you have a scenario of a unit of police going into an extremely dangerous area like Nyanga, the fire is leaving, they rape the Shabins, they arrest, they confiscate the alcohol, then that person will pay an admission of guilt and get his alcohol back. So based on that information shared, it is estimated that about 50% of the liquor that's confiscated is returned back to the illegal traders, and that is a serious challenge that we set. We have therefore subsequent met with the Department of Justice, we have written to him, and we have raised the matter through the structures of DEFCO, that the state law attorney must give us a new legal opinion that then focus or that they will allow the police to keep, where meaning that if you pay admission of guilt, you forfeit automatically the alcohol. The reason why it's currently in that way, Chair, is that because of the Criminal Procedure Act, and I'm one of the specialists in the room, I'm not a specialist on this, but in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, if there's any item that's in evidence, and after conviction, you are entitled to have that item is returned to you. So it's a bit of a bizarre matter, and we hope that through the Justice Department and the State Law Advisor, we'll get an amended opinion. If we don't get a check, we are envisaging a court application and make a ruling that will set the precedent for other cases. Chair, thank you kindly.
That's not only 50% return. That's shrinkage of money for that.
No, Chair, I don't know whether the committee has ever attended or gone to this court, but I remember many of the cases are not paid admission of deal, it actually then goes to the court, or the person pays the never comes to collect the alcohol. Maybe Colonel K can give more of
it. Understood. I thought it was of X amount taken from, it should be only 50% of that, but it's in total. That would be right. Any questions for the...
Thank you, Chair. Around the powers of the tribunal, like the main tribunal, there are two options. One is to revoke the license, the other one is to suspend. Now, I just want to know, in terms of the suspension issue, when the license is being suspended, I presume there are certain contraventions being broken. And also that it's not in line or compliant with certain prerequisites and conditions and stipulations. I just wanted to know whether, in the case of suspension and after due consideration, whether these people are given timelines to rectify, if should there be any contraventions or other priorities not being met or conditions not being met, and when can it lead to total that the license can be totally revoked in which instance?
Yeah, Chair, we apply a system of progressive sentencing. The expert allows us to issue compliance notices for the lesser offense.
Dr. Nyalba. Thank you very much for being with me to say we kept you waiting. We're actually releasing him earlier. So thank you very much for your presence here. And if there's any issues that you want to raise with the committee at some stage, you're going to have to try and put pressure on the executive to make it easier for yourself. You know, we have those boxes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alright, then we're going on to the next presentation, which is the financial policy commission report.
The chairperson, Mr. Paul, will present to the committee. Maybe just in terms of opening remark, is that of course the work of the financial commission is ongoing. We unfortunately do not have the, as they will say, the bottom line figures in terms of the reduction in vigilante murders and other crime in Kailisha, because that is impending the release of the crash test by the police. Suffice to say, Chairperson, that we know that there has been a significant reduction in the number of vigilante killings in Kailisha since the work of the Commission of Inquiry. But as I said in the previous reports that we tabled, we had updated figures. We have not been able to get the updated figures because the police will only release the figures once the crime stats have been released. I think then in many of the other recommendations, Chair, I think the lesson we've learned, for instance, on the staffing, that is a movable target all the time. So when you report back, then let's say the vacancy rate is maybe 10%, and next time it's 2%, and then it's back to 10% because of resignations or staff turnover. So it is an ongoing process, Chairperson, but then let's then have an update on that, please.
Thank you, Chair. Background of the Kailisha Commission and its establishment. The report was released on the 25th of August 2014 after the significant amount of work, 2 years amount of work, and 20 recommendations were made of it. The Commission then recognised that there was many inefficiencies in the police, but that there were some areas of excellence. In terms of what happened after the Commission's report was released, it was that a task team was established by the Premier and the representatives of the police and the department. It was later expanded to include five individuals from different stakeholders, including the CTF, SACO, Business Sector, and faith-based organisations. We had on several occasions, however, unfortunately, most of the civil society organisations didn't persist, and we had continued engagement only with the Social Justice Coalition. And throughout the period of 2 years, we reviewed all the 20 recommendations and we updated them, but many of them, as Mr. Morris said, they're not static. Some of these issues change and fluctuate over time, depending on the challenges that are facing. What was also established, we established a monitoring and oversight team in terms of recommendation three, to oversee the implementation of the 26 sub-recommendations in terms of recommendation 3. I don't have a detailed presentation on this. We're still in discussions with the staff around the integrities of that report, and we'll make that public information. What was also established was in Kailisha itself, Major General Brothers, once the commission's report had been released, the established Kailisha Joint Forum. This took on a life of its own, and the settlements with the kind of the water project from September onwards, where we will be starting to identify key problems and sticking points among all the stakeholders in the healthcare and the government. So to go through with the recommendations then, in terms of recommendation one, that is please that should show about the community police commitment. Here we see quite a lot of work around amending the service charter to include an express commitment to community policing. Community policing commitment was established for each police station and with all the contact joints, contact information. This was posted at all different police stations in the three different languages. The police also engaged continuously with the community on the radio and various public forums. And then also there was many other forums for engagement with the community, notwithstanding the financial joint forum. So after that, in terms of recommendation one, it was an undertaking from the police to publish station-level crime statistics regularly by assessing notices on the notice boards and the CSC. Unfortunately, as we know, the police have not been releasing crime statistics any more regularly than once a year and 6 months after the end of the financial year. This is determined by the national competency. In terms of the Western Cape Community Safety Act and the regulations, this requires the Provincial Commissioner to report on crime stats to the NCO on a quarterly basis. This is the one area of the particular regulations for the stats have not been reported. In terms of recommendation two, was the recommendation to adopt a procedural justice model for policing. The procedural justice model really hinges around how the community perceives policing, and that it perceives community, it perceives policing as just and fair. We have many discussions in the committee about the meaning of procedural justice, and there's a very strong feeling from the police that the procedural justice model really takes us further than the existing regulations and the CAP whole of society approach which they have really adopted. So we continue to go with that particular approach and ensuring that the police adopt an efficient and approachable engagement with the community at the same time while adhering to all the basic constitutional rights proposed by government. The model was that there be regular information around the community's perceptions of the police. The Department of Community Safety conducts an annual community safety report card about the policing needs and priority sessions. The SAP has also revised one of the recommendations is around the revision of the station's performance chart. This is again the national competency, so the national to do that. But there was a revision of the performance agreement with the station commander of the SAP, I think that's the estimate, to include compliance with the whole society approach. In terms of recommendation three, as I said, there was a set process for this. This was a team that was established by CAP and the department, some of the heads of CAP who were on that team are here, Rudy Foster. And once adopted, we took all the 26 recommendations, we compiled a tool, and we conducted an assessment at each of the three police stations during January and February of this year, compiled an initial report, we presented the report to the task team committee for debate, there were some comments and feedback from the police. We refined the report based on the feedback from the police that some of the procedures had been changed since the recommendations of the commission, and we went back and revisited some of the findings so that we could take into account some of the operational changes that had been made. In terms of recommendation four, which required an early change management process and leadership of Gaia, we know that there was a commitment to make a general vote. It was made a significant change to the Gaia Chapter and to the Gaia Chapter 3 police station. Unfortunately, as we know, he's going to be leading when you looked at the sketch policing guidelines and visual policing guidelines, etc., etc. But there were many discussions around how to improve visible policing in informal settlement areas, and particularly around working in collaboration with different community-based structures, such as the CPS and the Neighbourhood Watch. And here, this is where the department partners quite closely with the police in trying to capacitate neighborhood watches in the area and build capacity there. In the Kailichi cluster, there are 24 accredited neighborhood watches, that's the whole cluster. In Kailichi itself, there are 10, five in Harare, three in Kailichi, and two in Unity West. That's a total of 273 registered members across those three police stations. There's also one accreditation that is still pending. Recommendation 7 looks at the process for determining the periodical human resource requirements of police stations. I'm sure the committee is aware that there's much discussion around this particular issue. Again, this is a national competency, and it's also the subject of the quality court matter that is where judgment is still pending on that. The hearing was evidence was heard and arguments was heard in November and February of this year, and that matter is still at that stage. So we do know that from 2016, the Commission has exercised its discretion to reallocate resources internally within the province. And this is a matter I think that the Provincial Commissioner can speak to about how decisions are continuing to be made about reallocation of resources. The department also undertook research on the political human resource requirements and has reported previously on this recently. Recommendation 8 around improving relationships between the SAPS and the people of Kailichi. I mentioned previously a number of engagements with the communities in Kailichi one of the primary mechanisms for enhancing relationships is working through working with the CPS. And here, DOCS and SAPS have been working very closely with the, or trying to work very closely with the CPS. All of the CPS are functioning and are engaging in various structures. However, there are inconsistencies in terms of their performance on the expanded partnership program in Kailichi. As you'll see in 2017-18, most of them are underperforming. Unilever West is the one that is performing better of the three. And this first quarter of 2018, we have 58% compliance from Unilever West and some delayed performance on the other two. So this is something that we're continuously engaging with and trying to build capacity. We have also had various training courses with the CPS in the checks in the police stations in order to improve their capacity. Also this year, there was a matching grant funding allocation approved for the million figures as well. So in terms of recommendation 9, which looks at the reduced human resource practices, there have been various training programs and courses that have been made available to members. The PEP mentorship training has been given to supervisors. There's monitoring in place for the implementation of the outcomes of disciplinary proceedings. A social worker was appointed in 2014 and has been based at the Harare Police Station to provide counseling and support to members. There are various processes that members receive counseling from a format to them. The staff recruitment policy was also changed as the respective members are required to undergo psychiatric testing. I don't have the updated figures in relation to this particular police station. As the HSC mentioned in relation to vigilance skills, we don't have the figures, but it has been reported to us by the SAPS that there have been significant decreases in vigilantism over the period. And this has probably been as a result of an increase in confidence in the SAPS and reporting of matters to the SAPS rather than taking these to their own hands. Around youth gangs and safe schools, from Kyneshire, from the Christchurch area, and colleagues in Isaac in Kyneshire with that area. Doc is also heading the Copyright Anti-Gang Priority Committee, which is developing provisional response to the National Anti-Gang Driven Strategy, and it also coordinates activities from all the different relevant law enforcement staffs and government departments in relation to gang recruitment. We have just developed a series of scorecards which will we have monitor performance in relation to the different government departments, including staff in the gang related areas. We have a list of 26 that we've been working with, 26 gang related areas, including parameter. Then we are also working, the Software and Gang Committee coordinates with the Software and Priorities Committee of SAS Schools. And here, one specific project has been developed, which is to develop SAS zones in 15 schools, or 10 priority schools. And we've done this with a transfer payment of 5 million to the City of Cape Town. They are going to be deploying neighborhood safety officers and school resource officers at each of the schools. Two of the schools in Kyneshire were identified, that's the Mitchell High School and Joe High School. And the school resource officers and neighborhood safety officers were trained and deployed from July this year. The project is going to be ongoing for a year, and we'll be monitoring the progress and the impact of this particular methodology in those in all those schools. And I think there was a recent upsurge in safety issues at the schools in Kyneshire, and the department facilitated an engagement with them and watches their demand. And this is building a safer partnership, particularly between the schools and the neighborhood watches. The department has developed a framework to pay for accredited neighborhood structures to conduct specific services in the schools, and the office will train, resource, and accredit the neighborhood watches and work with the city to ensure consistent uniforms and standards for neighborhood watches. And we're also working with the youth and religious partnerships to work with youth in those areas. Just in the June July period, 26 organizations were recommended funding, and I think we worked with 23 in the end. Each part of them is 60 youth. And we're seeing around 15,000 each. So all of these are provided a week-long holiday program for youth in the area. Around recommendation 13, this is where this was a focus on the sale and consumption of liquor and the proliferation of unlicensed liquor outlets in Kyneshire. The department was, or the province was asked to conduct a study on this. We contracted the UCT Department of Health Department to conduct a multifaceted study. We previously reported to the committee on the subject. But also, the province of course has established the alcohol harm reduction game changer, where one of those areas is in Tau 2 in the Mental West. There's also the alcohol harm reduction white paper that was released in 2017. And in terms of the harm reduction in the Mental West, we worked with the private sector to establish 8 CCTV cameras in that area, and we're working with the city law enforcement to monitor this. These are the 3 levers for the alcohol harm reduction game changer. I'm not going to go into them. If you have some questions around them. This project focuses on some of the areas that they're exploring in Tile 2. So one of the areas that they're looking at is because there's a high number of illegal liquor outlets, they're exploring ways to license more liquor outlets in that area, not to increase the overall number of liquor outlets, but rather to work with liquor outlets that are licensed and to monitor them in a better way. And so the province is exploring, the province and the city are exploring various land use partnerships. Together with the CCTV cameras and the city's engagement, we've been in a deployment of 12 law enforcement officers in Town 2 to increase visibility and monitoring of 8 CCTV cameras. These are monitored at the Transport Management Centre in Goodwood, and the province also deployed systems board and community who assist with the monitoring of these houses. Those six houses which have agreed to comply with the rules and standards that were developed have demonstrated 100% compliance with. Then the Delivery Service Unit conducted or output research survey in 2000 in March this year. They interviewed over 1,500 respondents, and the respondents, 70% of the respondents across that town too is now satisfied from a year ago. This is a result of more visible policing from law enforcement and from the staff. 55% feel safe during the day, and 51% of respondents lost their apartment jobs. In terms of domestic violence, a number of steps have been taken to strengthen domestic violence compliance. Docs also provided DBA training to CPS members and then WASH members. CPS has been mandated, sorry, the group has been offered and mandated to follow up on several domestic violence complaints. And then we also conducted DBA compliance monitoring in the past in 2015. There is also discussions around strategic use of information technology and the handling of complaints by police, of the fact that police, and some engagement with the ICID around that. ICID was experiencing difficulty with a reduced, with under-resourcing of their staff, but they did report a reduced backlog in cases that they were investigating. I just want to list some of the cases that have been reported from Kyalisha to the recently appointed ombudsman. And you can see there's a number of cases that were reported between 2014-15 up until August 2008. 96 cases have been reported and dealt with. And the majority have been dealing with poor communication and poor investigation. Chair, I'm unable to say whether this is a lot or a little. Obviously, it is dependent on the number of crimes. The Ombudsman's Office has informed me that Kranicha is one of the top 10 reporting stations, or Kranicha is one of the top 10 reporting clusters, but we haven't been able to have further analysis. In terms of governance and oversight, there was a recommendation that MAU be combined between the department and police staff in order to grant access to police stations and office. We did have some negotiations that started and have not been finalised. However, many of these issues are now governed by the Community Safety Act. In terms of the physical infrastructure for these stations, the MacArthur Police Station is on the plan for development in 2019 with construction planned in the next year. Harare has ample elected, Harare has been equipped with new park homes, and new elected West has been prioritized for new park homes. Then the recommendation 18 was to look at the use of CCTV cameras in Kyalisha. At the time of the Kyalisha Commission, there were 16 cameras not already working. This is a recent announcement that was provided by the city in 2018. And there are now 24, or there were 24 cameras, that includes the 8 new cameras that were established with the alcohol harm reduction hand trailer. And 3 of the cameras that were there have now been removed due to long-term damage or constant vandalism, theft of power cables and equipment, and also some of the cameras becoming obsolete over time. 6 of the cameras were offline at the time, also due to vandalism and power interruptions and so on. And at the time of this inquiry, only 15 of the cameras were operational. And that the 8 of the cameras are installed in South Sea, that small area. And during the period 2017 and 2018, 194 crime incidents were recorded at these cameras and reported to the police. I don't know if you can see this map at all, but this is an indication of the RKF cameras. The ones with the red star are those cameras which are not operational. So all of those that are possibly in South Sea and South Sea, many of those are unfortunately not operational.
Thank you. This was quite a mouthful in a short period of time. Thank you very much.
Will talk to an issue that is also
would be if the lessons in terms of are those lessons also going to be implemented in other areas within agriculture, such as Taiwan? Because Taiwan is just a different in terms of medical outlets and also in terms of the abuse of other facilities in the area. Thank you.
Okay. I'm working for Moses. I just want one clarity. Under regulation 5, in particular the fourth question 3, is a phenomenon or a genetic cross force that if the doctor is not in France or is not submitted of the third attempt, the case gets either withdrawn, struck, and lost. How many of these, as indicated, are based on exactly that? Of the 88 cases that have been brought. Thank you.
That is being stolen, but there is an ongoing, when you look at this picture of
with government money. They came out to put up with money through the industry in through the game changer and the negotiation. It is definitely necessary, person, to roll out the camera network and system. General Dula also through the prompt points gave the commission now that we look at strengthening the link between the TSC where all those cameras are and the police at ground floor that we respond to it. And I think the success of Town 2 is also because we, through payment from our side, we have the 17 dedicated law enforcement officers from the city that have been appointed additional and they are deployed only in that area and we monitor them. I think again, Chairperson, it speaks about a dedicated capacity that is then aligned with the priority area. Will we be rolling out the lessons of the game changer? Absolutely not. We're already doing so. As I briefed earlier on the confiscation of alcohol, if we can get that fixed, it will cover all the areas. It will cover the whole province on that. The school principals are not part of the priority committee. They also they won't be part of the water. But we have representatives of education department at these forums. The principals, I'm told, must be at the school teaching and being part of that. So we have the district manager of education part of the plan meetings and the follow-up. The Chrysalis impact research, I can mention, as I've done to the committee before, that Chrysalis last year was evaluated and they have now received full accreditation for the full program. We have set recruitment targets specifically for Khayelitsha. With every intake, there must be a youngsters recruited from the area, but we'll give you those figures. I don't want to speculate, I don't have them with me. The general rule again so-called gang areas. It remains difficult to run these programs because of the fear of shooting and so forth. What this impact study showed to us on the YFIP, that in the 4 years that we've run this program, we've never had safety problems through the religious fraternity. So it seems to me, Chair, that there's high respect for religious areas, even in the gang station. So the YSRP, the religious fraternity, is one of many partners. Remember, we still have the official partnerships with many organizations, with the CTF, the Neighborhood Watchers. This is then one that's specifically focused on school holidays. And what we do is we pay a top-up grant to the churches that, in any case, the mosques or religions that already run programs in the area. We then pay them a top-up with the requirement that they have provided at least one meal. We also we are presenting to this committee, as a declaration reminding me, on the 12th of September we are scheduled to present to the committee then specifically on the YSRP. Is already on the schedule. From outcomes, it is a difficult one, Chair. The impact study speaks about outcomes. I think the biggest outcome that we can stand for is that it removes the kids from the dangers of the cities. It's not meant to be, with due respect, it's not meant to be life-altering programs. It's only a week, and it's meant to take them into a safe area and to keep them positively occupied and to provide a meal. BTUU is still involved in the game changer area, and their involvement is mostly on the deployment of the community-owned solutions and then the neighborhood watch involvements. Honorable Member Christians, control of informal settlements, I think what my understanding, and again I'm not the expert on this, especially not with the PC in the room, but what we're told is that the sector policing model must be used in all areas, whether it's formal or informal, it must be included in the sector policing. I think the reality that was also highlighted through the Commission is that in many of those areas, there's simply no streets, there's simply no, it's almost impossible to do vehicle patrols and so on. So it's a continuous process then to understand.
as is normally so the job of economy and the two what we have given on national allocation.
Just one part of the question. In relation to the progress of the chair, there's mention of 15 schools that will receive and school resources. And there's only two schools identified for IH, and that will get their share of the school resource officer. I want to check where is the other 13 schools that those school resource officers will be deployed. And the oversight team that has now been established, when can we get the report of that oversight team yet? The last one, Chair, is on the labor watcher. There's a number of labor watch team that has not been accredited, or rather created. I want to check what are the issues why the accreditation of those labor watch has not been finalized, and also in which specific operational areas are those labor watches that is not yet accredited, and to what extent is the non-accreditation of those labor watch impact on the service delivery in terms of ensuring that the communities are safe?
Thank you, question on the remainder of the schools. I'll have to come back to you. I don't have that information with me now. I can mention that it was linked to the 26 stations, the so-called GAM stations. So, but we'll provide a list to the committee chair. The oversight team, the report has already been compiled. It is now, if my information is correct, still with SAP for inputs. Yeah. So when will that report be available? Okay, so if we then say the 1st of September, we will, or shortly after that, we will then table that report at this committee, or forward the report to the committee chair. The neighborhood watch accredited and the areas again, Chairperson, I don't have that information with me. We'll have to get that and forward that to you in the
night. All right. Actually, I do foresee a bit of a red light in the Auditor General's new demand that transfer payments be dealt with in a specific way. And I see you giving a lot of money into India, CBO, and other organizations. So I think you're going to make some changes going forward.
I think it's good to know that we've gone through the mold this year. We've had a number of comments. We have stood the test of time. Our 9 consecutive clean audit has been confirmed. And the payment made, especially to the CPS, and then the similar, that's when I presented to you last week on the neighborhood watches that will follow a similar process. Especially the payment made to Kaizisha was put under the microscope. It went to the National Treasury Technical Committee and they then confirmed that it's all legitimate and all good.
All right.
Then
I think we've done with regards to that is concerned. General Zula and your team, and HOD and your team, thank you very much for your presentations. Your release, thank you very much. General Zula, if it's possible, to do on the buses in a very short meeting at present. But I think there are refreshments at the end of the corridor. It's a tea and spa.
Has that lady.